The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be back with you in our Edstone studio. I didn't mention yesterday just how nice the studio looks with the backdrop. We have a little work to do on the studio back at headquarters. Maybe next time we're in town over there, we can dress it up a little bit. But the guys, every time I come back, it seems like the guys have added a piece to the studio. It's very comfortable in here, very cozy. I have monitors all around me so I can see what's going on, just like all of you can if you're watching the YouTube stream. Many of you I know just listen to the audio, and that's just as well. Anyway, to get the message, on today's show we're going to be talking about just making some comparisons. My father brings this out in America Under Attack. He points out how that we saw Satan's attack against the Worldwide Church of God, God's church. We saw it happen back in the 1980s and the early 1990s. We see what the devil did to that church by going right after the top, by using the government in the church, people that were deceived or that were opposing Mr. Armstrong and that followed in his steps. That's what they said they would, but they didn't. And they proceeded to destroy the church. We'll talk about that. And then the way that Satan is going after the United States of America, again, using people right at the very top to bring down the government, to bring down the nation. And the battle against the Trump administration, it's ongoing. And again, God's giving him some backing there because of the temporary resurgence. But it really is dividing the nation. And bringing, as my father brings out in the New Throne of David book, it's going to bring down the whole nation because of the sickness, as Isaiah 1 brings out, head to toe. We'll get to that here in just a second. But also, on today's show, we'll continue on from our study yesterday. We got into 2 Kings 2 there, talking about the Elijah schools, or what became the schools of Elisha. As you continue the story, once Elijah was taken away, we talked about honoring and respecting our elders, but we'll continue to look at the many miracles that God performed in support of his servant, Elisha. Well, you heard there at the top of the hour, this tragedy, these nine family members, this Mormon community just across the border into Mexico, nine of them gunned down or burned to death by these drug cartels. The New York Times this morning had a headline saying it lays bare the government's helplessness in Mexico. Of course, President Trump and his administration were upset by what happened on this rural roadway. Six children and three women. CNN says there's evidence leading to the theory that this American family may have been targeted. This is from CNN today. It says some of the evidence emerging in the aftermath of the attack on the family of Americans in northern Mexico on Monday may indicate that they were deliberately targeted. This is according to a U.S. official. It says here that theory is based in part on the nature of the attack, which unfolded as an ambush that continued even after the women and children fled the cars. So it wasn't a case of mistaken identity. Even when the children were fleeing, they were gunned down. It says the family has a long history in the region and has known, and rather was known, by the cartels, making it likely that the Mexican cartels were aware of the family's travel patterns and the kind of vehicles that they were in. So that just happened yesterday, and it does, as the New York Times brings out. It shows just how helpless the Mexican government is in controlling these cartels. And of course, the U.S. can only do so much as well, being that it's in another nation. And then you add to that the border crisis and the work that those cartels are putting in to put forward all those drugs that come across the border. It's just an impossible. There's no way a human being is going to fix these problems. There's a story here from the Federalist, another tale from the upside-down world, you could say. It says YouTube has removed a video by a conservative news outlet, The Daily Signal, over one sentence that YouTube claims violates their hate speech policy. It says in the original video, Dr. Michelle Cretella, a pediatrician and executive director at the American Academy of Pediatricians, commented on the insanity of wanting to mutilate one's body for the sake of becoming transgender. It says here, see, this is quoting this pediatrician, if you want to cut off a leg or an arm, you're mentally ill, but if you want to cut off your, well, your private parts, you're a transgender, she says. That's how ridiculous and upside down this is. If you do it to your arm or your leg, people would say you're sick. And yet you do it to the sex system, no problem. You're just a transgender. It says now YouTube has replaced the Daily Signal's video with a message saying this video has been removed for violating YouTube's policy on hate speech. That's considered hate speech today. That is just crazy. Isaiah 5 and verse, I think it's verse 20, calling evil good and good evil. That's what we're seeing today. Another big story yesterday uncovered the obvious double standard and bias at ABC News. They were quick to try to destroy Brett Kavanaugh just a year ago, I guess it was, maybe a little over a year. And yet, as was exposed yesterday, here they are trying to cover up the actual sexual predators, trying to conceal people like Jeffrey Epstein, or sitting on that story anyway, for 3 years, according to this undercover video. This is the ABC news anchor, Amy Robach, and she was caught on tape. Talking about how that they had all the evidence 3 years ago to come forward with this story on Jeffrey Epstein, but ABC squashed it. This is clip one.
She told me everything. She had pictures. She had everything. She was in hiding for 12 years. We convinced her to come out. We convinced her to talk to us. It was unbelievable what we had. Clinton. We had everything. I tried for 3 years to get it on to no avail, and now it's all coming out, and it's like these new revelations, and I had all of it. I'm so pissed right now. Like every day I get more and more pissed because I'm just like, what we had was unreal.
There she is venting, as one article says. And yet, if you see that video, she has her mic on. Obviously her producers are listening in. So when they come out, this woman, this anchor, and then ABC, and say that, well, you know, it really wasn't that way. It doesn't really hold water, statement that both of them released yesterday. It says, Robach now claims, through a network statement, that she was caught in a private moment of frustration over the lack of progress on a story. I was upset that an important interview I had conducted with Virginia Roberts didn't air because I could not obtain sufficient corroborating evidence to meet ABC's editorial standards about her allegations. ABC, you see, they have big standards, high standards, when it comes to allegations regarding sexual misconduct. They're not just going to throw a story out there for no good reason. They've got to have a lot of evidence, they said yesterday. This article here, this is from National Review. Sorry, but Robach's comments or response to the firestorm, it doesn't square with her initial comments, in which she states that Roberts had pictures, she had everything. It was unbelievable what we had. Bill Clinton, we had everything. Everything that we needed. And yet ABC chose not to run that story 3 years ago. Of course, 3 years ago would take you right back to the presidential election. And a story like that, particularly if it reeled in Bill Clinton as well, that would have hurt Hillary Clinton. And we can't do that. But as to this business about the standards, the editorial standards that they hold to, what about Brett Kavanaugh, as some have pointed out? And not even just the Christine Blasey Ford allegation. There was the other lady, Julie Swetnick, who came forward saying that Mr. Kavanaugh had gang raped people. And that was promoted by ABC. ABC, they had plenty of time and space, plenty of news opportunities to report about Swetnick's charges. Remember her her lawyer at the time? That would be Michael Avenatti. Yeah, they put him right on the TV. All in an effort to bring down Justice Kavanaugh, or Brett Kavanaugh. So here's a case where they sit on a story that has proof of an actual sexual predator, and then they're out there trumpeting and promoting a story about what they say is a sexual predator when it's all a lie. It's exactly opposite of what it should be. It's upside down. And this final piece from the National Review, it says, paired with NBC News' burying of the Harvey Weinstein story, we now have evidence of two major media institutions protecting serial abusers, protecting them, even as they're out saying that Brett Kavanaugh did it when he didn't. One wonders how many young women might have been saved if they hadn't. If they hadn't protected Weinstein and Epstein, how many young women might have been saved? I think Juanita Broderick, I saw her tweet yesterday. She's the one who accused Bill Clinton of sexual misconduct. She tweeted out, NBC kills the Weinstein story and gives Matt Lauer a rape button. CBS employed and kept quiet about Les Moonves and Charlie Rose. ABC killed the Epstein story. And all three ran with anything that dropped into their lap about Justice Kavanaugh. Disgusting. It is disgusting. If it dropped into their lap and it could hurt a conservative judge, well, they will run with it. Forget about any corroborating evidence or editorial standards. That only applies to one side of the aisle, politically speaking. This morning, I was just going through a few pages from the new Throne of David book in my personal study, and I came across this section from the, I think it's the fourth chapter, Satan Attacks David's Throne. But my father says there, look at America today. What is wrong with this nation? What's wrong with America? We're so dangerously divided, it says. The radical left is waging an aggressive campaign to sow rebellion and chaos. People are using the language of revolution and insurrection. They're increasingly relying on violence as a political tool. They're threatening and attempting to overthrow the government. And as I said at the top of the segment, well, when you look at the history from the past 30 years or so, what happened inside God's church, the way that Satan went after the church of God, there are some similarities, there are some parallels, as the America Under Attack booklet brings out, some parallels to the way Satan is going after the United States of America. Just take this one example. This is the media going back a couple of years. This is how they reacted to President Trump and others saying, look, the deep state's doing this, the deep state's coming after us. There's this underground network, this resistance force, this opposition, and they're doing anything and everything to try to bring down the presidency, to try to bring down the government. Listen to this media montage, clip two.
You hear this deep state phrase, which is real paranoia.
It's sort of an intellectual pollution.
This deep state talk feels very... very destructive.
There is no deep state.
It certainly sort of puts to rest this idea that there was a deep state.
It's relatively devoid of any logical underpinning. It's something about deep state people and yada, yada, yada.
Yes.
And it's not bound to anything. It's bound to weird conspiracy theories that are...
Conspiracy theory that there was this deep state.
It just doesn't comport with reality.
There's no deep state.
Deep state conspiracy. There is no deep state, and we need to stop talking about it.
When Monmouth described the term as, quote, a group of unelected government and military officials who secretly manipulate or direct national policy, nearly 3 in 4 Americans said they believe that the deep state exists.
So 3 in 4 Americans believed it existed or exists. That was there at the last part of that montage. But here are all the media heads saying that there's no such thing. It's just paranoia. It's intellectual pollution. It's destructive to even talk about it. That was going back from a couple of years ago. And then you think about what John McLaughlin, he's the former CIA director, what he said just last week at this conference. This is clip 3.
The impeachment inquiry is underway, sparked by a complaint from someone within the intelligence community. Feeds the president's concern and often used term about a deep state being there to take him out.
Thank God for the deep state. I mean, I think, everyone here has seen this progression of diplomats and intelligence officers and White House people trooping up to Capitol Hill right now and saying, these are people who are doing their duty, who are responding to a higher call. Mm-hmm. Think about it for a minute. With all of the people who knew what was going on here, it took an intelligence officer to step forward and say something about it.
So that's John McLaughlin just last week. He was there with John Brennan. And there's all these intelligence agents, officials, these administrative state officials, and they're there laughing it up. Where he's saying we ought to be thankful for the deep state. It used to be that the deep state didn't exist. To say so, well, you are a conspiracy theorist. John Brennan, speaking of him, this was from a tweet back in September. He says this, a reminder to federal officials, there's no limit on the number of individuals who can use the whistleblower statute. If you think you were involved in unlawful activity as a result of a directive from Mr. Trump or someone doing his bidding, now is the time to report it. See, now is the time, says this former official. This former CIA director. Now is the time to come forward. Now's the time to blow the whistle. The more we can get, the better. We're trying to bring down this presidency. Think of that anonymous column at the New York Times just a little over a year ago. Someone saying, I'm part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. He's not just a political opponent. He's part of the resistance. Kind of like the anti-Nazi French resistance in World War II back in the 1940s. Well, we've got to resist Nazism. This anonymous column, by the way, this author says, the dilemma which he, President Trump that is, does not fully grasp is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know, says this author. I'm one of them. So he's part of the resistance. Now, you see, they come forward and say, well, of course there's a deep state. Just a couple of years ago, they were saying how ridiculous it is even to think that. Now, you think back at some of that history from the 1980s when the Worldwide Church of God, well, first when they started making changes, they talked about this conversation that Joseph Tkach supposedly had with Mr. Armstrong, even just as he was about to die. And Mr. Armstrong told him about all of these changes that needed to be made in doctrine. And Mr. Tkach, he was stunned by it. And he thought, well, I need to get a recorder and tape all of this because the brethren won't believe me. And then Mr. Armstrong was supposed to have said, don't worry about it. Just let the Spirit of God guide you and so on. Well, there was quite a few times in those early years where they'd make doctrinal changes and then say, we haven't made a change. What are you talking about? We've always believed this. We've always taught this. And of course, after a few years went by, then they came clean and they didn't just say, well, this is actually what we were saying then wasn't quite true. This is, we were making changes. They didn't put it that way. They just came out and said, well, of course we made those changes. That was in our heart all along. That was the plan from the beginning. Just like you see in the media today, they never admit that, well, we got it wrong. They just change the narrative whenever it suits their purposes and then keep moving forward. Can't even remember what they were saying even a year ago. But of course, if you had your eyes open to what was happening, as many sharp commentators did, you knew that the presidency was coming under a fierce attack from the beginning. We know a lot more now, of course, in 2019 than we did maybe back in the early stages of the presidency in January, February, March of 2017. But even then, think about this exchange on MSNBC. This is March 2nd, 2017. So we're just a month and a half into the Trump presidency. And here's what a former Obama official is saying on the news, on MSNBC, 6 weeks into the Trump presidency. This is a clip four.
Well, I was urging my former colleagues and frankly speaking, the people on the Hill. Mm-hmm. It was more actually aimed at telling the Hill people, get as much information as you can, get as much intelligence as you can before President Obama leaves the administration, because I had a fear that somehow that information would disappear with the senior people who left. So it would be hidden away in the bureaucracy, that the Trump folks, if they found out how we knew what we knew about the Trump staff's dealing with Russians, that they would try to compromise those sources and methods, meaning we would no longer have access to that intelligence. So I became very worried because not enough was coming out into the open, and I knew that there was more. We have very good intelligence on Russia. So then I had talked to some of my former colleagues, and I knew that they were trying to also help get information to the Hill.
A lot going on today.
Yeah.
Mark.
That's why you have the leaking.
Exactly.
People are worried.
All right. Put it in 10 seconds, Mark.
Yeah, that's why you have the leaking, because people are worried. She's talking about addressing her former colleagues and saying, look, you better get as much information as you can before it's too late. And then she refers to the Trump folks. So they've got to compile all this information. So it's hidden away in the bureaucracy. That if the Trump folks, if they found out how we knew what we knew about their staff and how they were dealing with the Russians, she's there. They're sure by that point he's a Russian agent. That was the hoax that they started from the beginning. Or I guess you could say right at the end of the Obama administration after Hillary Clinton lost. Then this was their backup plan. As Peter Strzok said in one of those text messages, they needed a plan B just in case. Surely he can't win the election, but in case he does, we've got to try to take him down some other way than through a popular vote or through a presidential election. And then she said there at the end, this is why you had all the leaking. Again, you compare this to the Takach transformation and what some of the Takaches were saying, or the Takach administration was saying there early on, Mr. Armstrong's supposed deathbed repentance. And then they didn't talk about that years later. They took credit for it. Initially, they said, we're just doing what Mr. Armstrong wanted us to do. And then later they said, no, that's what we wanted to do. Mr. Armstrong was a heretic. And the story just kept changing over and over and over. Mark Hemingway had a piece at The Federalist just the other day about Donald Trump versus the interagency consensus. What could this be? Hemingway says, Trump's presidency has been unfortunately defined by the emergence of senior government officials who are quite open about demonstrating loyalty to the administrative state. He refers to a testimony, recent testimony in the sham impeachment hearing, the private underground basement hearing, that is, this Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, or Vindman, I think he's retired now. In any event, he testified that he was concerned. He was concerned. He became aware of outside influencers promoting a false narrative of Ukraine inconsistent with the consensus views of the interagency. Well, how dare they have a view that's at odds with the consensus views of the interagency? Well, that phrase stood out to this journalist, this commentator at the Federalist, because he's heard it before. A lot of these administrative state officials, they're saying, look, it's going against what his policy over here in Syria or wherever, Mr. Trump, it's at odds with the consensus. So we have to do something. There has to be a resistance. Hemingway says, what are the consensus views of the interagency? In this context, Trump is accused of withholding aid to Ukraine in exchange for Ukraine investigating the quite obviously shady business dealings of a political opponent's son. However, the aid in question was military aid to the Ukraine, including weapons, to help combat Russia. Trump's predecessor, Obama, was unwilling to give the Ukraine lethal military aid. In 2015, Senator John McCain, not exactly a charter member of the Trump fan club, chastised the Obama administration for this. It quotes McCain, the Ukrainians are being slaughtered and we're sending them blankets and meals. Blankets don't do well against Russian tanks, said McCain. You look at the actual actions. What are these members of the deep state? What are they upset about? As far as even the foreign policy of it all. It says, were federal officials in 2015 sounding the alarm about Obama defying the interagency consensus? Well, back then they didn't sound the alarm because the president had final say. The president established policy. It was the president who had the consensus view, you could say. And sure, there were those, I'm sure, in the administrative state back then that might not have agreed with it. But how do you think they would have done had they come forward and blown the whistle on Barack Obama, the president that all in the media loved, just absolutely loved? Victor Davis Hanson had a piece at American Greatness the other day as well, and he talks about just the nonstop attack on this president, how that every month or so you've got some Hollywood figure figuring out a new way to assassinate this president. And then on the news cycles, you've got every 3-4 weeks, a new turning point or bombshell. You've heard those montages before. It just goes on and on. But Hansen focuses in particular on these intelligence and military officers, the ones, many of them who are retired, who are out there at conferences like you heard last week with McLaughlin and Brennan. They're saying that, well, we ought to give God thanks for the deep state. And many more should come forward. And then people are clapping and cheering them on. Yes, indeed. Hansen says here, Donald Trump had been in office less than a month when the Wall Street Journal reported that U.S. intelligence agencies had decided on their own to withhold information from the recently inaugurated president of the United States. They just took it upon themselves, these intelligence agencies. Well, there's some things that we're going to withhold. There's some things we won't tell him. It says in some of these cases of withheld information, officials have decided not to show Mr. Trump the sources and methods that the intelligence agencies use to collect information, the current and former officials said. He's quoting from the Wall Street Journal. And then Hansen correctly asks, well, what would you call that? That's some kind of obstruction or a coup or a conspiracy. A conspiracy in plain sight. A conspiracy for everyone to see. It's right there in the Wall Street Journal. Evelyn Farkas, you heard her on MSNBC. Right there on one of the cable news stations. Well, Hansen says that a lot of this is about to be exposed all the more because of Michael Horowitz's report, John Durham, of course. But in Hansen's article, he goes through all of these retired military officials, Barry McCaffrey, who for the past 3 years has talked about this president being stupid and cruel. He's more loyal to Vladimir Putin. This is a former military man. General Stanley McChrystal, he's retired as well. He said all these derogatory terms against Obama and the Vice President Biden back several years ago. And he was removed from command for it. Well, now he's out there trashing the president, the current president. And they love him. They love him now. It says former CIA Director Michael Hayden, a four-star Air Force general formerly smeared by the left for defending supposed torture at Guantanamo, compared Trump's policies to Nazism. This is Michael Hayden, the former CIA director. He's comparing President Trump to Hitler. Hansen says, again, when our best and brightest former generals and admirals inform the nation that the current elected president, with whom they disagree on the Middle East and border security policies, is immoral and cruel or deserves blood guilt, or is the equivalent of a fascist dictator or similar to those who set up Nazi death camps, is not the obvious inference that someone must put an end to the supposed fascistic Nazi takeover of the government? Apparently so. He gives another example in his article, the retired Admiral William McRaven. He's denounced this president from day one. And he's out there talking about how that he needs to be removed from office sooner rather than later. We're just a year out from the election, as I was discussing yesterday. But here are these retired military men saying that he needs to be removed. And it needs to happen sooner rather than later. Hansen brings out how that in all of these cases, they're not putting forward any kind of, okay, here's the crimes that he's committed. They just don't like his policies. So they're concluding any way and every way we can get him out. Let's explore all the options. Listen to this conclusion. It says here, in the past, when retired generals rarely and inappropriately weighed in on the allegedly improper, stupid, or immoral drift of a contemporary progressive president, they were met by a progressive firestorm of potential insurrectionaries. Further on, Hansen says, had any of the current generals said anything similar about President Obama in fashion they now routinely attack Trump, their public careers would have been ruined. They would have been ruined. Had any of them talked about Obama the way that they talk about Donald Trump? Today, they're just out there, all these former military men, these former intelligence agents, head of the CIA, FBI, they're out in front of a large gathering of administrative state officials as they're cheering on statements made by McLaughlin, who's expressing his thanks for the deep state, and Brennan, who's encouraging more of them to come forward. Listen to what this former Deputy National Security Advisor, one who recently worked for President Trump, KT McFarland, see what she had to say about this conference where they were praising the deep state. Clip 5.
Just think about this. This is the director of the CIA, mm-hmm. and he's in front of a group of nameless, faceless bureaucrats, and they're laughing about the fact that 63 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump can be just dashed aside because they don't happen to like the result of the election. I experienced the deep state personally as Deputy National Security Advisor to President Trump, and they know exactly how to subvert the president if they wanted. We would have meetings in the Situation Room. Mm-hmm. Within a half an hour, the meetings were leaking out with their own particular spin. The same thing would happen to President Trump when he would call foreign leaders. Within a day, the transcripts were leaked out by people who didn't like what Trump was saying and who thought that they were far smarter and far better equipped to rule this country than the American people.
Just like that lady on MSNBC said, well, that's why we're leaking, because we're worried. This is the Antiochus administration, you could call it. The deep state, the administrative state, all of these bureaucrats that weren't voted into office. But there they are, leaking away. There they are, attacking the presidency, trying to do everything they can to go against the will of 63 million Americans, as she said there. Going back to this section I was reading this morning, the new Throne of David book, it says, President Trump has said, my administration is under siege. And that's true, my father writes. But the reality is that all of Israel is under siege. No man can solve these problems. The times of the Gentiles are upon us. Attacks on the nations of Israel are increasing in frequency and intensity. It says God's giving more latitude to Satan the devil, who is frothing mad because he knows how short his time is. And my father goes on to say how that we've got to be well aware of just how short time is. We've got to bring more urgency to our prayer, our Bible study, and to our spiritual endeavors. When we come back, we'll try to do that as we continue our study in the book of 2 Kings and the miracle, the way God backed his servant, the prophet Elisha. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Did it ever strike you as most unusual that the great God should have raised up the ancient nation Israel to be his chosen people? Consider these seemingly paradoxical facts. God says he is not a respecter of persons. Is he then a respecter of nations? Does he have a favorite? Did you ever realize that God denied his chosen people salvation, save only their prophets? That the chosen nation was given only material and national promises? That God's Holy Spirit was inaccessible to them? The Holy Bible is indeed a book that is primarily about one people, the people of Israel. But why? This astounding truth is a mystery totally unknown by any religion, by Christianity, by even Judaism. It is thoroughly explained in this book, Mystery of the Ages. It is an intriguing story. The mystery of Israel has great significance in God's purpose for all peoples. One cannot understand the real purpose and incredible potential of man without this vital knowledge. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
When you think about God's work, the work that he performs through human beings, all through the Bible, Old Testament and New, because God, this supernatural power, his power, because that power is behind his work, it makes the work a miracle. And you can look around and see evidence of miracles all over the place. God, of course, wants us to do our part. It's a partnership. He's not doing it all for us, but he does work through us, and that makes it miraculous. God living in us. Yesterday, we went through that section in 2 Kings where those young people, those teenagers came out and showed disrespect toward the prophet Elisha. And the prophet turned around and cursed them. And two she-bears, it says, came out of the wilderness and just tore up 42 children. And we focused yesterday on the importance of honoring and respecting our elders. Well, if you continue on with the story, Elijah, of course, is taken away, and you had all of the sons of the prophets who were there watching and observing, keenly interested in the events of the work. Elisha, remember, smote the waters, the same exact miracle that Elijah performed just before he was taken away. You continue, just to hit a few highlights from 2 Kings, chapter 4, it tells the story of the widow. This is a widow of one of the sons of the prophets. She told Elisha that her husband, before he died, had gone into debt, and that a creditor was about to take her two sons as payment because she couldn't repay the debt. So Elisha suggested that she just give whatever property she had to the creditor, and she said, well, I don't have anything except just a pot of fine olive oil, and it wasn't very much. So he told her to gather up all the empty pots and jars in the house and to pour oil from this one pot into all the others, and she ended up having more than enough oil to fill everything. And he said, now go and sell the oil and repay this debt. An incredible miracle, similar to John 6, what happened there with the fish and the loaves. God feeding thousands of people when there wasn't any food around, really. Just a little bit, a few scraps. Verse 38 of 2 Kings 4, it says, and Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land. And the sons of the prophets were sitting before him, and they said to his, they said unto his servant, set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. So it was a difficult time, a dearth in the land. And the students were there. They have to eat like any students do today, but they were there to be educated from God's prophet. And the college was growing by this point. The work just continued on in Elijah's steps. That's what should have happened after Mr. Armstrong died. Instead, we saw a great falling away, a massive attack on the Church of God. Satan destroying that church from top to bottom. Verse 39 in 2 Kings 4, it says, and one went out into the field to gather herbs, it says, and found a wild vine, and gathered therefore wild gourds his lap full, and he came and shred them into the pot of pottage. Well, what happened is they cooked this soup, and it was horribly bitter. Verse 41 says, but he said, then bring meal, and he cast it into the pot and said, pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot, so all the bitterness was removed. Another miracle, and this is one that the students witnessed. The other one, the previous one, well, this widow was the mother of one of the students, one of the sons of the prophets. So here are all these students witnessing these miracles, seeing God's hand, God's miraculous hand, backing his servant, his prophet, his apostle. If you look at the New Testament history, or if you consider that history with Herbert Armstrong, an apostle of God, 2 Kings 6:1, it says, and the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, behold now, the place where we dwell with you is too straight for us. I love this passage because it conveys that they were outgrowing their facilities. That's often the case with God's work. It grows. It starts like a mustard seed, but then it grows to become one of the biggest in the fields, it says in the New Testament. So here the place was too straight for the sons of the prophets. They didn't have enough classroom space. And it says, let us go, we pray you, unto Jordan and take thence every man a beam and let us make us a place there where we may dwell. And he answered, go you. So they needed more space. The work was growing. And it's interesting too, I think here, that my father's brought this point out before, that this was the students' idea. They wanted more space. They wanted to expand the facilities. And God got them involved. It was a hands-on operation. Down in verse 5, it says, but as one was felling a beam, the axe head fell into the water, and he cried and said, alas, master, for it was borrowed. He had borrowed this axe, and it fell into the water. And the man of God, That's how he's referred to oftentimes in 2 Kings here. Elisha, the man of God. Remember yesterday he asked, where is the Lord God of Elijah? Where is Elijah's God? Well, Elisha found him very quickly. He was right there with him now. Smooth transition to power. And the man of God, Elisha, said, where fell it? And he showed him the place, and he cut down a stick and cast it into the water, and the iron, it says, did swim. Therefore said he, take it up to you, and he put it out his hand, or rather he put out his hand and he took it. So here's a case where the axe was floating, a floating axe, another miracle from God in the former prophet's booklet. My father says probably only 4 to 6 people in the world ever saw this event, but it was still a spectacular miracle from God performed before his little flock. This certainly must have been inspiring for those students. God wanted these young people to learn that if you're loyal to him, he'll work amazing miracles in your life. If you're backing God's work, you can expect miracles because they will happen. See, this work, the church that's doing God's work, it's a living miracle. It's a miracle right out in front of us. We can see it. Our eyes are open to it. If we're really tuned in to what God is doing, to what this work is involved in, it's just been, you look back at the history of this church, even following the death of Herbert Armstrong and all that destruction, and just the very small beginning back in December of 1989, we're coming up to our 30th anniversary. 30 years, we're just a little over a month away from it. But it started in the smallest of possible ways, just 12 people, no buildings, no equipment, no campus, no youth programs, just 4 families, and Malachi's message to God's church today. That's it. And look at how much it's grown. You see some footage on the YouTube stream there of the campus as it's developed over the years. Just an incredible miracle. And then we get through with one project and we'd need more space and another building. You'd see another building go up. And even still, you look at the worldwide work, what this church is doing at Edstone here in the UK. Hopefully it'll expand soon in Jerusalem. And still, when everyone comes together at the feast, it's just a pretty small scattering of people scattered all over the earth supporting this end-time work. It's a miracle. So many miracles along the way. Verse 8 in the Moffat translation, it says, and the king of Aram was fighting Israel. He planned with his officers to lay an ambush at a certain spot, but the man of God, there he is again, sent warning to the king of Israel not to pass that spot because the Arameans were lying hidden there. So Elisha warned the Israelite king about this Syrian ambush. Verse 10, it says, so the king of Israel, sending to the spot about which the man of God had warned him, saved himself. This happened more than once, it says. It greatly upset the mind of the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and asked them, can you not show me who is betraying us to the king of Israel? None of us, my lord king, said an officer. It's Elisha the prophet in Israel. He tells the king of Israel the very words you breathe in your bedchamber. He's revealing the secrets. He's revealing your movements. He knows. Think about what this church knows. Because of the prophecies of God, because of revealed truth, because of new revelation. And think of the warning going out from this church to our nations, the United States, Britain, little Judah, the little Middle Eastern nation of Israel. Well, this king here in Syria was filled with wrath because of Elisha revealing his maneuvers. Verse 13, it says, "And he said, go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, behold, he's in Dothan. Therefore sent he their horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about." So here's this Syrian army, of all things, encircling the city. And it was all in order to get Elisha to find and to kill this man of God. Verse 15, "And when the servant of the man of God," so here's another one of the students, "when the student was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, alas, my master, how shall we do? What are we going to do here? We're trapped. And he answered, fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." Don't worry. Don't get into a fluster here. Just hold to your faith and know that our side is bigger. It's actually the enemy that's outnumbered here, not us. Verse 17, "And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray you, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha." It's amazing, isn't it? Elisha, he didn't pray for God to send help or to send an army. He knew the army was already there. He actually prayed that God would open the eyes of the student. He prayed that the student would be able to see what he could see all along. This powerful spiritual force. He knew as he traversed the region, Elisha did, that he wasn't traveling alone. He wasn't on his own. He was following God. And being on God's side, it puts us in the majority camp. It puts us in God's army. That's a wonderful comfort. That frees us from a lot of anxiety. If our faith can grow to be strong like Elisha's was here, just think about the worry-free existence we're going to have, knowing that God will back us, knowing that God will fight for us, knowing that God's army is much bigger. Verse 18, "And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Eternal and said, smite this people, I pray you, with blindness. And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha." And so here are these Syrian soldiers, this Syrian army, blinded. And then Elisha leads them back to Israel as captives. Just an astonishing miracle, and an astonishing display of God's power. In the former prophet's book, it says, "This is how God has always protected his obedient family. It's a prophecy of how God protects his Elijah work today. That's why Mr. Armstrong did such a towering work in spite of his enemies, his many enemies. This is the reason God's Philadelphia church today does such a powerful work with only a tiny group of people, just a tiny little group of people, and yet a worldwide work, yet another miracle, more miraculous intervention." Well, let's see if I have time for this last bit here. Verse 22, it says, "And he answered, you shall not smite them. Would you smite those whom you have taken captive with the sword and with your bow?" It says, "Set bread and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master." And he prepared great provision for them. And when they had eaten and drunk, and he sent them away, and they went to their master. So the bands of Syria came no more into the land of Israel. Elisha turned this army over to the Israelite king and basically said, look, don't put them to death. They're not going to bother you anymore. The Anchor Bible says Elisha is portrayed as more actively involved in military affairs than Elijah. Well, there's some parallels today for us, because we're certainly involved in a lot of spiritual warfare, as I said in the first segment. We saw it up close and personal. in that church history following the death of Herbert Armstrong. My father writes in that prophet, Elisha was involved in a war. Likewise, our work may be thrust into the limelight very soon. We shall have more intense spiritual battles than those faced by the followers of Elijah during the Philadelphia era. Are we ready for military attacks spiritually? Well, we're getting ready for these attacks. And if we're walking forward, if we're going forward in faith, then we know, we absolutely know that God will back his work with miracles, just like he did with the Elisha work of old. One miracle after another, after another, after another. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, don't forget, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.